could see that I wasn't happy. So they found a school, well, I called it a special school, because it wasn't, it was all disabled people, but there were people that had bad asthma, there was people there that was in wheelchairs. Again, I wasn't happy. I can remember going there and thinking, oh, this is all disabled.
Yes.
But my mum said, you've got to go to school. You can't just stay at home. So I give it a go. But when I hit 14, I didn't want school.
So how long would that school was meant to have been from, like the equivalent years of a secondary school?
No, they started from, Bramwood was from, they had young children there to big, like to older.
Okay, so from about maybe three?
No, I didn't see them about three, I would say five.
Okay.
Yeah, five upwards. But yeah, I give it a go, but I then become a bit of a rebel. And from 13, started really playing up with the school. And at 14, I then thought, I'm not going to go. Don't want school. And my mum and dad had a lot of trouble getting me to go. And I think in the end, I think the school just gave up and let me, I just didn't want to go to school no more.
Yeah, yeah.
So I kind of left at an early age.
So the, yeah, okay, yeah. And did you have anything, any subjects at school that you were particularly drawn towards or interested in?
Yeah, I loved, I wanted to type. I had a thing, I wanted to type. So my parents bought me an electric typewriter that we had left, taken to the school.
Yeah.
And they did get somebody in because I wanted to do shorthand as well. But everything I do, it's best that I do it my way. So even typing, I did it my way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was really interested in the typing. I did love cooking there actually as well. I was very good at doing like cakes, very cake decorating. And I can always remember if the headmaster had special people coming round to look at the school, he seemed to always do it at a time that I was in a cookery because he was very proud of the way I used to use my feet.
Yeah, yeah.
And he used to, you know, always say, come and see what she can do. And but then when I did leave school, and obviously there was sort of, well, what am I going to do for work? My dad went to his work and asked the boss whether he would give me some sort of job in the office. And, you know, he did. He gave me a go, which I was really pleased.
And how did it work out?
How did it work out?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously I was just doing bits in the office, like a little bit of typing, and then the lady that was in the office, Margaret, would get me to do filing.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, it was really good, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I always, I wanted to be a telephonist. So before my dad got me that job, I did actually go for an interview of being a telephonist.
Okay.
And I went for the interview and I did everything. You know, at that time you had to pull the plugs out.
Yeah.
And they were saying to me, we don't know whether you'd be able to do this, but again, great determination. I said, I can. So they let me do that. I passed that. And then they said, the only thing is, like, you will have to carry papers to one person to another.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, but that'd be easy because we could put one of the big clips that you have on a clipboard, that could go around my neck on a chain and the people could clip the paper. So they had no problem with that.
Yeah.
The only thing that let me down was my spelling. Because I had to do the phone and write down things, my spelling let me down. But they and all the people there, they were waiting to see whether I'd got the job. And when they said, we can't give it to you because your spelling's not up to standard, everybody in that, the whole place was so disappointed because they really wanted me to work with them.
Yeah.
And the actual boss said to me, if you go to college and learn more spelling, come back and we'll give you the job. But again, I didn't. I kind of thought, no. And that's when my dad went to his work and they said yes.
Yeah.
Then they were getting a new switchboard at this place, and I'm thinking, oh, I'd love to be on that switchboard. And John Spurge said to me, it's all yours. So I loved it. Was doing, and you didn't have to pull the cords, it was like little buttons, little switch buttons. So I worked doing that, and I loved that. But what ended up me not wanting to work is I got told I could have a car, you see, and I never ever thought I would be able to drive.
How old were you now? What roughly age were
this
you
This would
now?
Have been, you're looking at being sort of just coming up to being 17.
Okay, wow. Well, a car at 17.
So, yes. Yeah. So when I got a letter from the trust saying, would I like to go to this, somewhere in London to see whether I'm able to drive.
Yeah.
I first of all thought at the time, you had the little blue disabled cars. And I thought, I don't want one.
Oh, yeah, I remember those, yes.
Three-wheeler.
Yeah, they're not cool, are they? No.
But no, they said, no, it's a normal car. I was like, oh, my God. So I remember going to London, and I had to sit in this dummy car to see how my reflections were on brakes, like to brake, would I be able to brake quickly? And then they said, you passed that, and you definitely got strength in your legs. And I'm thinking, God, how am I going to steer? Because I'm thinking I've got to put my feet up on a steering wheel.
Yeah.
And they said, no, that this is, and told me how the car would be adapted.
Yeah. Then how would it be adapted?
It's
Can
a plate on
that?
The floor.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
a plate.
Okay.
And all the my indicator is on my accelerator. Mm. It's all down on the floor. It's amazing. Then they said I could have a Mini Clubman or a Mini Clubman Estate. Mm. So I chose the car, the colour, and you know I couldn't wait to get my car. And then obviously the day we went to pick it up, I then had to get booked in with a driving school. And I got booked in with BSM, I think it was. But the first guy, when I got in the car, he was so nervous. And he said to me, I've never taught anybody with no arms. He said, I've got to tell you this. He says, and I'm quite nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, you're nervous. He only was with me for a few weeks. I mean, he must have been really scared. And then they gave me somebody else and it was fine.
Yeah.
So obviously, once I passed my test, I failed it the first time. I think I was just too confident. So when I passed my test, I then didn't want to go to work. I wanted to go out.
Mm.
And this is when I become a very big rebel. Mm. And this is when my mum and dad noticed.
Freedom.
Me. Yes.
Yeah.
Because one, I could never go on buses. Well, I did give a bus a try one day because I'm thinking, so unfair. Why can't the bus people let me have something that I haven't got to carry money, like a badge or something, because I wanted to go on buses and trains like everybody else. But this particular day, I thought, you know what? I'm going to put money in my shoe and I'm going to try a bus. Didn't tell my mum or dad. And I did.
Wow.
But again, lift it, having to take the money out of my shoe and lift it up. But I did, I'd done it.
Yeah.
So having a car was freedom.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
I can remember
mobility
asking,
in a different way, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
can remember asking. I said, "Oh, I would like blackout windows because I don't know." I again, being conscious of me, I didn't want people to see me driving without arms, but I didn't get the blackout windows. But I just looked normal in a car.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
you're just sitting there like everyone else.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I started to have days off work and going out with friends. And in the end, I felt it wasn't fair on my dad, really, because my dad worked there. And in the end, I said, I don't want to work. I just want to go out. And, you know, I can remember taking a car full of girls up to Liverpool to meet another thalidomide. I got friendly with another Mandy. And me and her, when we first went to Switzerland, when we come home, we decided to go there on our own. Again, and we went back to Switzerland about three times, just me and her.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because my mum said, when at that time I went on that holiday, that first holiday, I went there such an angel, and when I come home, I'd changed.
Yeah.
I'd even started swearing.
Yeah.
And my mum said, you have changed.
Yeah.
But then getting the car, I really did change because I became a free person. And I'd started to go out more. I started then going up to Liverpool every weekend, going into clubs.
Yeah.
and I became me. Mm.
Yes, you sort of, you found your own personality and your own... Yeah. That's a fantastic story. Thank you so much. So you're naturally answering all of the questions I've got, basically, in your story. So I'm just running back and making sure that there's nothing that I've missed out along the way here. So things about first career and things like that you've already talked about, and contact with people, other people affected by thalidomide. And you gained independence, really, when you got your car. And that kind of thing. What about things like relationships? Did you find it easy to make relationships?
Yes, or did you find joy in impairment?
Didn't get in the way.
I started to make friends and have boyfriends. And obviously, you know, I met Wayne.
Is Wayne your partner now?
Yes. Yes, we've been together 31 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty impressive.
Considering, I mean, obviously, when Wayne's mum and dad knew about me, I think they were really worried that, you know, I wouldn't be able to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a worry. I mean, some people didn't think we'd last, to give us 2 years.
How did you meet?
It was weird because, again, when I got my car, my mum said to me, she said, oh, don't ever go down Shaky Jake's. Well, when Shaky Jake's was a place that my brothers used to go down. It was like a big, it's like a big field where they'd light a bonfire. And I had a thing about hippies at that time. I loved hippies, and they would play guitars, have a good drink, and obviously some of them would smoke pot.
Yeah.
So my mum said to me, don't ever go there, you know, don't go down there. So what's the first thing I do? Gets all my friends and said, come on, we go down there.
Yeah. If you're being told not to, you know there's going to be something exciting, don't you?
Yeah. So I went down there because my brother's there with all his mates who are all playing guitars and that. And then Wayne and his mates turn up. And I can remember him with a big bottle of cider in his hand. And, you know, and I think, oh, these are nice. These are nice boys.
Yeah.
And we started to go down there quite a lot.
Yeah.
But you know what? I couldn't wait to go home and say to my mum, I've been there. Do you know what I mean? It's like the rebel in me is like, you know, just to let them know.
Yeah.
I don't want to be told what to do anymore.
Yeah.
I'm me. And, yeah, we started going out. And obviously then our first daughter, well, I fell pregnant. And my dad, I'll never forget, my dad, he just said, is he going to marry you?
So you were living at home at that time?
Yeah. And but before Wayne, I wanted to be around older men. I didn't want silly little boys.
Yeah.
So I did date an older man, and my parents were absolutely appalled by it. But when I look back, I think probably did that to annoy them, really.
You know,
being with an older man. Yeah, so I went through that.
How much older was that?
Oh, God, I was 17 and he would have been about, what was he then? 31. No, there's a lot.
That's a lot older, isn't it? I mean, now 31, of course, seems really young, but, you know, when you're 17, 31 seems very old.
Yeah. And I think my parents have never, I think they're always worried was people with me because of money. And my mum, when I very first knew about the trust, I was about 11.
Yeah, so I was going to. That was one of the other questions: is when did you get your compensation through?
Yeah, 1974.
Yeah,
and I didn't really know nothing about the trust. My mum just said to me, "Oh, she started to explain that I'm going to start to get a bit of pocket money," and she said it'd be you've got this trust money, and you can have a little bit of this, and you can have that.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it was really quite good because we were quite a poor family. My dad really worked hard and, you know, he was such a proud man and he wouldn't take nothing. And stories that I've heard from other thalidomides where their parents fleeced all their money, I used to say to my dad, you know, when I knew about my money, I used to say to my dad, Dad, why don't we get a new car?
Yeah.
Wouldn't have it. Wouldn't have a penny.
Yeah.
Even when I got my car and I couldn't drive, I used to say to my dad, you can use that, Dad. He wouldn't. So there's one thing I can always say, that my mum and dad, you know, never touched my money, never.
So your money was for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think why I like a nice home now, my mum and dad's home was never posh. Do you know what I mean? You know, and I said to her one day, why don't you have some new carpets? No, wouldn't. So, you know, he was a hard worker and he was not ever going to touch my money.
I think that's fantastic, to be honest with you. Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, just the attitude that so many children needed their parents to take.
Because it's sad when I've heard
others. Because you're going to need it later in life, aren't you?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how supportive your family are. Mm. You're going to need that money.
Yeah. And that's, you know, when you hear of others and what their parents had spent their money on, and I thought, oh my God, my parents didn't touch none.
Yeah.
You know, so, I was really proud of them.
I think that's fantastic. Really, very good.
Yeah.
And did you, going back to your, so you met Wayne.
Yeah, yeah.
And you got pregnant with your first daughter.
And then we got married.
And so how old would you have been then at that
19.
Point of time? Wow, that's really young.
Yes, 19.
Okay, so age 19.
Yeah.
You're with Wayne.
Yeah.
And you're pregnant.
Yeah.
And you presumably, you probably left your family home at that point?
No, I was still at home. And obviously, my mum and dad let Wayne more or less really move in.
Yeah.
You know, and he spent more time with us. And then, obviously, we got our own place.
Yeah.
And
after your daughter was born or before that been?
No, we got it before Nicola was born.
Yeah.
But, you know, I never ever worried that I would carry not a normal child. It never ever went through my mind.
You're reading my mind here, because that's my next question. Did you ever worry that you would, thalidomide would pass across?
No. The only time I worried is when Nicola, when she grew up, she fell pregnant at 15.
Yeah.
And I was mega shocked.
Yeah.
And at that time, Freddie Asprey was saying that it was coming out that children were being born the same as us. Like, thalidomides were having children being born the same as them.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, he phoned me up and said, and this was about a week before Nicola's baby was due. And he said to me, you know, you need to be prepared that this could go through to a grandchild. And I said to him, no. I said, it's not. Because I can remember going to the scan with Nicola, and I didn't tell Nicola this, but all I wanted to see was arms on that baby.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard rumours that there was some being born.
Yeah.
So the first time I went and see the scan, it was like the baby flew the arms up in the air, because the woman said to me, oh, look, there's the arms, because we didn't know if it was a boy or girl.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, thank God.
Yeah.
So a week before she was due to have her baby, Freddie had spoke to me. I was livid, and me and him had never got on after that. And he said to me, you know, he wanted to, because I was the first thalidomide grandmother, he wanted to get it all publicised and let me deal with this. But you've got to be prepared that even though you've seen the scan, this somebody else had, I'm sure it was, he said Glenn Harrison had a daughter, and she was born the same, and they'd seen scans. So he said, do you want to prepare yourself? So I was so upset, thinking, oh my God,
it's passed
what
through.
If? But, you know, I don't think Freddie realised what stress he caused me, because I would never forgive myself if Callum, my grandson, had been born like that. So I did say to Nicola, I sat her down and I said, you know, it was on, something come up on the news about they wondered where thalidomide could be passed down.
Mm.
And I said to her, how would you feel?
Mm.
And I said to both of the girls, how would you feel if you had a baby the same as your mum? And both my girls said, won't bother us, because you're normal to us. You've brought us up normal.
Yeah.
So I had this conversation with my dad and my mum, but my dad really got a bit upset because he said to me, well, what would you have done if you carried? And then I said, I wouldn't have gone ahead. I wouldn't have gone ahead with the pregnancy. So my dad got a bit, he said, that's upset me. He said, that's upset me, girl. I said, but why? Yeah. He said, because have you had a hard life then? I said, no, not really. I said, because I'm strong. I'm a strong person.
Yeah.
It hasn't been easy.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No, of course not.
But I good job I was strong. But I certainly would not want to bring another child like me into the world. And I still would say that now. But my girls are totally different. Totally different.
Yeah.
And they said it wouldn't bother them the least.
Yeah.
Because of how I was brought up and how I coped. You know.
I think it's different when a generation is different, isn't it? So my daughter, I've got a 10-year-old daughter. She's met a lot of people affected by thalidomide. She would say exactly the same as your daughters, even though she's only met people.
Yeah.
She'll say things to me like, why would somebody not want a baby? It wouldn't bother me if I had a baby born, you know, I would want my baby, you know, I would want them. So, but perhaps it's different when you're, you know, when it's something that's happened to you rather than it's, you know, because you're obviously so capable.
Yes.
And successful.
Yes, yes.
That it seems as though it's not a struggle.
No.
But that doesn't mean to say it hasn't been a struggle.
No, no. And it's getting a struggle now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always worried about getting older.
Yeah.
I worried when I would hit 60. But it's not good now.
Yeah.
You know.
Is that because of physical wear and tear?
I think where I've put on a lot of weight as well, I'm restricted. And my legs really, really play up. My knee, I mean, I had a terrible fall. There was, and this is why Wayne ended up giving up work and retiring. Because it was about 8 years ago now. And this was very strange. This was very strange. Wayne, his work, he was a builder. He used to go out of the house by 5:30 in the morning. Never used to see him till about 6-7 o'clock at night. But this particular Friday, he didn't go to work. And I used to get up of a morning, and my workroom used to be outside. And I used to go out and unlock the room about 8 o'clock in the morning, put the heating on. And it was a frosty morning. And we'd got decking out in the garden. And I would never wear shoes, I'd wear flip-flops.
Yeah.
And this particular morning, it's a Friday morning, Wayne was in bed. I'd gone out in my nightie with my flip-flops, not realising it that decking gets very dangerous. And I slipped and my head hit the patio, my ribs went into a plant pot. Now, my brother lives next door and I could hear him in the garden. But I was so winded, I hadn't realised I'd broke my ribs as well. And I don't know how I managed to get up. I always say this is fate, that somebody lifted me.
Yeah.
Because I could not breathe. I managed to get in and call Wayne, but I was in such a state, they called an ambulance. And where I'd put my right leg out to save me, it's obviously really damaged my knee. So I said to Wayne, you know my work will be good. I know that what I do, I can, you know, go self-employed. Really, it'll be better for you to give up work, take over doing a lot more so that my legs don't have to do loads anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we've done, you know. But he does have to help me more.
Yeah.
And you kind of think, when he first met me, he didn't do nothing for me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I was an independent.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, even with my girls, I would not let them have to do anything. Yeah. You know, I didn't ever want them to go to school and say, oh, I can't come out, I've got to come home and do this for my mum.
Yeah.
Never. I made a rod for my own back because they didn't want to do nothing.
Yes.
But now I'm getting older, you know, I do need a lot more work, help.
Yeah.
Wayne does everything. I don't cook. No, I can't. My legs just don't hold up so much anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so I do worry because the day that I can't feed myself, it's going to be awful. Because when I put my, I put my leg up like this.
Yeah.
But after 10, 15 minutes, that kills. that really kills.
And that's a big change.
Yeah. And another thing you say, I used to be a beautician.
Yeah.
Before I did, you know, what I do now. So I was well into makeup and hair and cutting as well. Kind of, I gave up, when I gave up the being a telephonist, I got into makeup and hair. And then I started getting asked whether I would do demonstrations, which I loved, you know. So I always, my appearance with makeup and that, that was very important to me. So now it's getting very hard because my bones, my legs are not moving like they, you know. And I just feel that Wayne's going to have to do more and more, and it's not fair. My eldest daughter, she's a carer for old people and that, and, you know, I know she would help. I don't want to rely on the girls just yet. You know, my youngest one that you just met, she just now lives across the road, which is strange that she's across the road. But I know as I'm getting older, it's, and I've got diabetes now, so that's not good.
Okay.
You know, my blood pressure's sky high. I'm having trouble. Nobody can take my blood at the moment. So we're having problems there.
Is that because of problems with taking blood from veins?
Well, I've had for years, my local hospital have took my blood from my feet.
Okay.
No problem whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the 8th of October, I needed my yearly blood test done. And Gina at the hospital phoned me up and she said, Mandy, we've been told we're not to do feet anymore. So my doctors...
Why?
There was nothing... They didn't tell me. She just said...
No explanation.
No. So I'm still waiting from the 8th of October. And I went to the doctors last week because I started to get really violent headaches, you see. And they're headaches when I know my blood pressure's up. And when he done my blood pressure, he said it is sky high. And I said to him, waiting around for these bloods, it is making me stress because it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be allowed.
Well, exactly. And if you have a blood test when you're stressed, it's higher. Obviously, your blood pressure is higher.
But they've still not got back to me. So when I spoke to, what's her name, on the trust, the Health Link, I can't think of her name now.
From the Thalidomide Trust.
Yeah, she contacted me. Yeah. And she said, really, I ought to look at finding other doctors.
Yes.
So I phoned one the other day and spoke to them and said about everything. And they've not got back to me. And I'm thinking, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So that stresses me
to
think, you know, this is really bad. Nothing comes easy.
No.
You know, it's like when I couldn't get motability when I first started driving, I wasn't entitled to motability. And I'm thinking, my God, do they not know that my legs and my arms, it took years before they... it's my MP that got it for me in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And you kind of think, shouldn't I have to keep fighting? And it's the same with this Grunewald thing. If only, if only they lived like me for one day.
Yeah.
This is, that's why I said I'd love to meet them and say, well, look, you do this with your feet for one day.
Yeah.
And then tell us that we don't need the extra money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you know what's worrying? We are all deteriorating pretty bad and quickly. And really, we could do with the money now.
Absolutely.
To enjoy it now, because what are we going to be like when we're 60?
I know you're going to keep fighting for it when you're 60. Yeah. My worry is that they're waiting for people to stop fighting.
Yeah.
They're going to wait until people don't care anymore.
Yeah.
And that's very bad, isn't it?
I know.
I'm going to pause for a second there. Do now.
Okay.
Mandy, I'd really like to ask you about what you do now in terms of your career and your work, because I believe it's very interesting.
Yes. I suppose you would call me a clairvoyant medium. I mean, I like to really be called a spirit connector, really. And it is strange that how I work now with the spirit world. I've known from an early age that there was something different, not because of having no arms, but strange things. From the age of 6, having really strange experiences. And as I got older, there was always this voice. And if ever I felt insecure or unsafe anywhere, I'd hear this voice say, you'll be all right, we're here. Mm-hmm. And of course, I never ever said anything to my mum or my dad because I'm thinking I'm a bit cuckoo. And it was when